Thursday, April 12th, Mike the Rotocop, Randy Haynes, Colin Weatherwax, Friends with Fantasy Benefits. We're here today talking closers, injuries, hot starts, cold starts, some guys unknown that you should pick up. And you can't really go on Twitter and do any in the baseball community and not talk about the Milwaukee Brewers closing situation. It's just an absolute mess. So I want to get your guys' thoughts on it, Randy and Colin. They told us Barnes, maybe Hader, maybe Albers. They gave Barnes a shot. He blew up. And he didn't really, he deserved better. I tweeted out that Jacob Barnes deserved better in his first save opportunity. Albers came in for the next one. He blew it. And then they tried Hader in the net to start the ninth inning. He gives up a home run to Pham. They bring in Albers. He finally gets the save. Jennings and Jeffries are really out of the picture at this point. Colin, talk to me about the Milwaukee Brewers closer situation.
So I don't think I want anything to do with it now. We've seen all three guys that we talked about on the last podcast get a chance, and each of them blew it. Albers might be the guy moving forward since he was able to get a win out of it. And then I think he saved the game yesterday. So, you know, I hope they use Hader in the multi-inning role. Barnes, he looked absolutely terrible yesterday. He threw, I think, three straight pitches in the dirt, like straight in the ground, not even making it to home plate. So Albers is the guy to own. I don't think it's a relatively long leash. And like I said, I don't want anything to do with this situation, really.
Yeah, it's not a good situation at all by any means. And all those people went out last week and spent all their fab money on Albers and Barnes, not really knowing what the situation was going to turn out to be. So a lot of people kind of lost a lot of fab credit for that because they could have put that money towards somebody better or somebody that has a role solidified. Randy, what are your thoughts on the whole Milwaukee closer situation?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Colin here. I think it's Albers for now, until he has another implosion. I did think it was at least kind of interesting that they, you know, Hader was in pitching the eighth the other day. He came out and started the ninth, and if he doesn't give up that bomb to Pham, they might have let him finish off the inning. So maybe Pham gets another, maybe Hader gets another crack at it here eventually. I guess the kind of stealth guy that might be waiting in the wings a little bit is Taylor Williams. He's been kind of sort of pitching decent lately, I guess. I don't know how much Milwaukee trusts him. He seems his usage seems to keep being a little bit later in the game every time. So if you're in a super deep league, maybe he's somebody that you spec on a couple weeks early. But as of right now, it's Albers. But yeah, I probably don't want to really be spending a lot of fab or investing a lot of time in any of these guys.
Yeah, and with Hader, I think, you know, he did give up that bomb, but he's been so dominant so far at the beginning of the season. So I think what Craig Counsell might want to do with him is let him pitch against the heart of the lineup, against some of the harder hitters to get out. And so it might be a situation kind of like Cleveland does, where Miller gets a save this past week just because the heart of the order was coming up. And it was nothing against Cody Allen. He was available, but that's just how, you know, some of the closing situations are moving towards, I think.
And interestingly enough, Oakland this past week had Blake Treinen coming in the seventh inning. I think it was against the Angels to face Trout Pujols, if I'm not mistaken. But he came in the seventh inning, and he's obviously solidified his spot as a closer there. But they wanted him to pitch in the most important part of the game, which I'm sure Brian Kinney will be very happy about, or was very happy about when he saw that one. Another closer situation that's kind of gone awry here, and Randy knows it firsthand by trading for Dominic Leone, giving up Colin Moran there. So Holland signs this about a week and a half ago, and they just call it bring him right up. He pitches the first game, walks four batters in a row, leaves the game. Total disaster. He pitched an inning in a third after that. It turned out to be actually a pretty good inning. But you got him there who's didn't have a spring training, didn't have an extended spring training, nothing like that. You got Bud Norris, Dominic Leone, Tyler Lyons, and everybody's favorite, Jordan Hicks. And obviously, they gave Holland all the money, so he's going to be the closer, and he's going to have a good chance here. He might be able to mess up a couple times before they remove him from the role. But, Randy, tell me if you see Greg Holland as the closer for St. Louis at the end of the year, or do you think it might be Jordan Hicks?
I think it'll be Holland, barring an injury. You know, when you see somebody lose control like that, you know, for an outing, you wonder if maybe he is injured a little bit or if he rushed himself into the season too far. I do think if there is an injury with Holland that Bud Norris, it looks like he's going to be the one that would get the crack. I know that's not exciting, but Dominic Leone just hasn't really been that stable so far this year. I know it's a small sample size, but he's been giving up several homers so far this year. You know, Jordan Hicks is somebody that we would love to see as fantasy owners with the strikeout potential that he has, but I think St. Louis is going to keep him for that multi-inning role. He's somebody that if you're in a deep keeper league, that maybe Hicks could be the closer maybe he could be there next year, but definitely in like 2 years he could end up in that role. But for this year, I think his value's kind of capped. So for now, I'm not worried about Haaland really at all. But if there was an injury, I do think Norris is the next guy in line now, and not Leon.
Yeah, and I was kind of weary about picking Hicks up because he didn't have that role. Everyone said he was going to get sent down when Haaland came up. He came out of the gate throwing 100 every pitch, so he's looked great. And now he's kind of solidifying himself into high-leverage situations. So I do think Hicks has some value this year, maybe not as much value as he possibly will have in the next couple of years coming up. Colin, what do you think about what's going on in St. Louis?
Yeah, I think Haaland's going to have to do a lot more than, you know, four straight walks, which is saying something in his first start. I think a lot of nerves came into it. It's a new team, a lot of expectations. They gave up a lot of money for him and a draft pick. So there could be the nerves. Like you said, Randy, he could have, you know, over pushed himself so that way he could be ready in time. So I think it's his job. I don't see them, you know, transitioning him to a middle relief role, paying him that much money. But, you know, in the case that he does blow up a couple more times, I think Leon might actually get a good shot at the chances. So, Randy, I think you dropped him in the Invitational. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. I didn't really see the point in having him anymore. And I ended up with somebody we're going to talk about here in a little bit in Kenyon Middleton. So it kind of made sense for me to drop him.
Yeah, definitely, because when you made that trade for Leon, everybody was all over him saying how great his stuff was, how great of a year he had last year, and it turned out to kind of backfire because he really hasn't been too good this year. So we'll see what happens in the future with Leon's situation in St. Louis. Another situation I wanted to touch on was in Houston, and I know this makes me and Colin very happy seeing Brad Peacock get saves. He has struggled a little bit his last two times out. He gave up the homer to Max Kepler, the walk-off. But it's weird. Weird things are going on in Houston because, one, their bullpen is so good. They could pretty much pitch anybody in the ninth inning. And, two, Ken Giles has one save. I think the team as a whole has four saves, and he only has one of the four saves. So between Peacock, Davinsky, Will Harris, you got a bunch of guys there in Houston. How do you see this shaping up, Colin?
Well, they also have Hector Rondon, who's closed. They also have Joe Smith, who's closed as well. So like you said, it's very deep bullpen. And I think Ken Giles' save was a one-out save against the Twins where Byron Buxton cranks a fastball down the left field line and it just goes foul. So they were on the edge of their seat for his save as well. So like you said, I do like the fact that Peacock's getting some saves. He's also getting some wins. That's why I was hyping him in the preseason. I am very concerned about Giles. I think that they're going to just transition him out of that role. They have Davinsky. They have, you know, the guys that we talked about that can close when need be. And I think it's just going to be a huge closer by committee, like five or six guys that are proven that can get, you know, saves. I don't think there's going to be a leader by that much at the end of the season for the Astros.
And listen, AJ Hinch isn't really worried about us fantasy owners when trying to win games. So he'll do whatever it takes to win a game. He actually said on MLB Network Radio that Giles may not be the full-time closer in Houston. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on there. Randy, if you're a Peacock owner, how happy are you seeing him get a save?
I think it's an added bonus. He was always going to be have a chance to pick up a couple here and there. I do think at the end of the season, Giles is going to lead this team in saves. It might not be as much as Giles owners were hoping for when they invested in him on draft day. So if you are a Giles owner, I would scale back the amount of saves you're expecting from him and definitely go out and try to grab a third closer if you don't have one already or be in the line for specking the next guy. Houston is kind of an embarrassment of riches. If you know, some of these other bullpens that we're going to be talking about would kill for some of these guys. And, you know, Houston's got, like I said, you brought up Rondon. I think he's a decent stash in case Giles does end up falling apart. But Giles is somebody that has good skills. It's just he's always had, every once in a while, he'll just have these monster blow-ups. And he almost had one the other day, like you were talking about with Buxton. And the way their bullpen is set up with having Davinsky and with having Peacock as their two best, you know, relievers, they're going to use them whenever they feel fit, regardless of the inning. You know, yesterday when McCullers was getting tuned up, and it was a situation where Houston felt they could get back in the game, but they had to stop. They had to, you know, bring in the stopper right there, and it was the fourth or fifth inning. Davinsky's throwing, he comes in, he slams the door, and allows them to get back into that game. So I'm not worried. That's why I'm not worried about Giles long term, but I am scaling back the number of saves that I had him projected for.
Yeah, for sure. And one other situation I want to touch on was the one going on in Tampa right now. And Cole Mays pretty much been a disaster. I mean, he's kind of rebounded a little bit, but he had a bad week last week. And for a team that is obviously so much behind everybody else in the AL East, they're almost tanking at this point with the lineup they're putting out there every day. They need him to have the trade value that he had 3 weeks ago, even before he started doing bad. So now what kind of situation are you looking at in Tampa, Randy, where Sergio Romo's there? They got a couple other guys there in the bullpen that could really just step up and be a placeholder almost for Tampa, and they could still get the value for Colomé before he really spirals out of control here.
Yeah, it's a tough spot because you're right. If he continues to pitch poorly, his trade value is going to go down. But at the same time, even though it shouldn't be this way, if they pull him out of that closer's role, that's also going to hurt his trade value. So I think they're going to try to keep him in there as long as they possibly can. You know, Sergio Romo, I guess, will be the next guy in line, but I don't have any faith in Sergio Romo to be able to hold down that job for any length of time. You know, Chaz Rowe is there, and he's somebody that has a really good slider, but there's not much else there. He's somebody that has always walked people. You know, I saw him pitch here in Baltimore for a couple of years, and he'd be fine for a few outings, and then he'd have just a monster blow up. And you know, when you're walking guys like that, you can't really be pitching consistently in the ninth inning. So I'm holding Colomé for now. You know, I'm definitely worried if I'm a Colomé owner, but maybe this is something that's, you know, the teams that might be trying to trade for Colomé, they might not be going as hard after him now. So maybe he ends up staying with Tampa longer than he would have at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and the numbers are really bad when you take a look into them. He has 4 innings pitched. He's given up 5 earned runs, only struck out 1 batter in 4 innings. So that's, and he has the loss. He does have 3 saves, but he really is going on a bad path here. What do you think about this, Colin?
Yeah, I think he has to do a lot more to lose the job, because what the Tampa Bay Rays want is for him to get that trade value back. And like Randy was saying, he doesn't have that right now. So their best interest is to leave him in that closer role and let him build that back up so they can sell him. So I think a sleeper arm in the bullpen is Jose Alvarado. He's a 23-year-old lefty, hard thrower. So he's one of the guys that I'm keeping an eye on. But the way that their bullpen is shaped, it's more for long inning guys. So there's not very many, you know, flyer names, unless you're talking about Romo and Rowe, that you can take a flyer on. But I think if I'm the Rays, I'm leaving Colomé in that position. As a fantasy owner, I'm very nervous. But I think he's going to keep that position, and hopefully he'll get traded to someone where he can close for a contender.
Yeah, and closer situations will always make for good dialogue, because there will always be issues as far as closers and teams maybe making changes in the closer role. Another thing that we could always talk about is injuries. And Colin, I know this one hurts you since you're a Texas Rangers fan. Elvis Andrews gets hit in the back of the elbow. He pretty much shatters it. He's out 6 to 8 weeks, which is a kind of a good thing considering what the first reports were, that he was going to be out for the year. So he's out 6 to 8 weeks. It kills me because he's on my fantasy baseball invitational team, one of my top picks. And he's not going to hit the 20 home runs that I was projecting him to hit. Now, I wasn't projecting him to hit 20, but I said it was possible. And he had a good start. I think he had 2 or 3 homers already. So he was on his way to 15 at least. Colin, talk to me about this Elvis Andrews injury and what kind of replacement Texas is going to have for him.
Yeah, I don't think it hurts me as much as it hurts you, because, like I said, I wasn't putting any stock in him in the draft season. I already know the Rangers aren't very good, so I didn't have any high expectations. But it's a bad loss. I mean, in the ninth inning, I believe there's 1 or 2 outs. We were already losing. There's no point for him to even be in the game, let alone be getting hit by a pitch. So it's a tragedy for sure for some fantasy owners. But moving forward, we all have to. If you're in a deeper league and you want to replace him with someone that's on the Rangers, Jerks and Profar, I mean, you know, sometime he might have to, you know, show it. He was the number one overall prospect a couple of years ago, so I think now he's going to have everyday at-bats with Odor on the disabled list as well, so he's going to be playing his natural position. They won't be flipping him around the infield and outfield. And then another guy that could give, you know, some versatility is Drew Robinson. He might bat towards the bottom of the order, but he's a scrappy little speedster. So that's deeper leagues. I mean, in shallower leagues, you can definitely find someone better. But I just think maybe this is the time for Profar, and if not now, then when?
So T.R. Sullivan, the Texas Rangers beat writer, tweeted today, Rangers will call up Ronald Guzman. Rangers will use Joey Gallo in the outfield and Drew Robinson in the infield. Just out of curiosity, you have anything on Guzman, Colin, or you haven't run into him yet?
He's one of the top prospects in our organization. He ranks number 3 in our organization. So I haven't read up too much on him, but you know, I put in the chat today that he was called up, and I was mad about it because Willie Calhoun deserves it way more than him. Right now, Willie Calhoun might be our best hitter, and he's in the minor leagues. So that's upsetting. But you know, moving Joey Gallo to the outfield, I don't think is the best idea. Drew Robinson can play a better outfielder than Joey Gallo, but I guess if we just got to throw bodies in there, you know, we have to take what we can get.
Listen, Matt Adams is playing the outfield today, so I think anybody can play the outfield. Randy, what do you got on Andrews?
Yeah, it's disappointing, but I think people are fooling themselves if they think Jerks and Profar is all of a sudden, you know, going to get whatever magic pixie dust and turn into what he was supposed to be. So I would, if the replacement for Andrews is not on the Texas Rangers ball club. If you're looking elsewhere, you know, Asdrubal Cabrera is out there still in a handful of leagues. I know that's not a sexy name, but he could at least, you know, help you out in those, you know, in the meantime, before Andrews comes back. The problem is there's not a lot of speed out there, and you draft, more than likely you drafted Andrews as one of your main speed guys. So it's going to be hard to fill that at shortstop. Miguel Rojas is out there in a good bit of leagues. If you're digging deeper, that's, again, not sexy at all. Aledmys Diaz, you know, we've seen him have good seasons before, but he doesn't run. If you're looking really, really deep, Nico Goodrum is somebody that he's run a little bit so far this year. Not a lot of batting average, but there's a couple homers, a couple steals so far. But I've noticed on some formats, CBS is one of them, he doesn't have shortstop, but I think on Fantrax he does. So it's a little weird, but eventually he'll end up picking multi-position eligibility. That's a huge deep league flyer if you're really desperate. But it's gonna be hard. You're not gonna be able to replace Andrews very easily on the waiver wire, more than likely.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to have Zach Cozart that I could slide into the shortstop role. I'll worry about my middle infield at another time here, but it'll be a lot easier to replace middle infield than it will be to replace shortstop. Now, that hurt me. Colin, I know David Price going down hurts you because you have him in the main event. He had a weird tingling sensation in his hand yesterday while he was pitching, only goes one inning. Now reports are coming out that he'll make the schedule. There's a good chance he'll make the schedule to start on Monday against Randy's Orioles. Talk to me a little bit about Price, Colin.
Yeah, I was super scared whenever it happened because, you know, all I saw was an elbow problem or a hand problem. So I was like, oh no, this is the reason why I wasn't high on him. Nick Pollock strayed me wrong. but no, now the reports are out that, you know, it might have just been precautionary. There's been a lot of weird stuff going along with pitchers pitching in cold weather. And it says that he plans to play catch today. So I'm not sure how that went, but I dodged a bullet for sure, and I don't know who I would have went and got from the Red Sox, because there's not very many, you know, high-talented free agents out there that they can pull in and plug in. I know Pomeranz is going to come off the DL soon, but he has his injury concerns as well. So, you know, I think I dodged a bullet. We'll see. If he comes back and faces the Orioles, then I know, you know, he's going to throw a no-hitter, and we wouldn't have to worry about it anyways.
Randy, do you have any shares of Price?
I have one. That was harsh there, Colin. They're starting to turn it around. It's definitely worrisome about Price. He was somebody that, you know, that was the thing was the health. It wasn't could he pitch well when he was in there. It's how many starts are you going to get. This just gives me like an uneasy kind of feeling. I don't see this ending well. You know, I would almost honestly rather him go on the DL, miss a start or two, and come back and you know that he's about as healthy as he's going to be, because I could just see this almost, you know, kind of snowballing and getting worse from here. So I'm definitely worried as a Price owner.
So would you sell now or sell if he comes and no hits your Orioles?
Yeah, here's the thing is I don't know this today. I don't know what, if anything, you're going to get for Price if he has a good start Monday against Baltimore or whoever
when,
his next start
when he has
or whoever his next start is against and he pitches well, then maybe I'd entertain it. But, you know, if somebody was going to is not going to pay you full value on Price because he's already got something, we're not even a month into the season, we're not even half a month into the season, and he's already got, you know, he's already got, you know, a knock against him. So I would honestly just hold and hope he can string together 4, 5, 6 good starts in a row, or maybe not so much good starts, but good enough starts, healthy starts, and then maybe you're shipping him out around Memorial Day. But I'm definitely worried, and I wouldn't sell right now because I don't think anybody's going to give you anything for him.
Nick Pollock will.
Yeah, Nick Pollock definitely will.
Yeah, but even if you were, if I'm not in a league with Nick, but I'm sure he would come at me with his, you know, fifth outfielder or his, you know, backup first baseman or whatever, because he knows that he doesn't need to offer a lot for somebody that is kind of a ticking time bomb at this point.
Yeah, the verdict's still out on Price. One thing I want to touch on, which I haven't seen too much dialogue on it recently, no one's really talking about it. Charlie Blackmon missed his third straight game tonight with the quad injury, strained quad. At this point, you're missing 3 games in today's baseball. You're pretty much guaranteeing yourself you're going on the DL, because the 10-day DL, guys are only playing 5-6 times in those 10 days. He's already missed 3 games. Now, this will have a bunch of repercussions in Colorado because they have so many people. Somebody's going to get at-bats out of this, whether it's Pat Valaco or Talkman or whoever it is. Talk to me a little bit about Blackmon, and why do you think we haven't seen too much of this on as far as dialogue goes, Randy?
Yeah, I think because he was it yesterday? He was in the original lineup, and then they ended up scratching him. So it's a little nerve-wracking as a Blackmon owner. It's one of those things where if they do put him on the DL, they can backdate it. You know, he only misses a couple of more games on top of what he's already missed. I'm not worried about it long-term. And it's not an injury where that if he does go on the DL, and even if, you know, if they do call up David Dahl, which is what everybody's going to hope for, that he's going to be right back down in a week, or they'll send somebody else down and Dahl will be back to a fourth outfielder. So this doesn't really, it just kind of is a headache for Blackmon owners in the meantime, and doesn't really benefit anyone anywhere else.
Yeah, it's just a little weird that a guy who was taken in most first rounds, if not the first round, the beginning of the second round, hasn't really been talked about too much as far as being injured when you miss 3 games. So that's just something I wanted to get someone different's point of view on. Let's talk a little bit about hot starts. And this is a guy that I wrote about in my pitcherless streamer article last week. To stream this week, he actually did pretty good. I think he went 4 1/3, 6 strikeouts, if I'm not mistaken. Yonny Chirinos for Tampa. This is another guy that's kind of unknown here, and every time he starts, he's getting more and more of a following. So give it about 2 or 3 more starts, he's going to have a nice following behind him and be at around like 30, 40% owned in most leagues. Colin, what have you seen so far on Chirinos?
I like what I've seen so far. I mean, you know, being a Tampa Bay pitcher, it has that added effect of pitching in Corsicana, so that's always nice. But the problem with the Rays is they always have these quote-unquote bullpen days, and I worry that they won't let him go far enough into games to help us. If he gives up, you know, a single, a bloop double, or something like that, you know, they'll just pull him and throw someone else in there. So until he gets a solidified spot in the rotation, I'll keep my expectations a little tempered. But I do have my eye on him in a few leagues, though.
So Chirinos has 14 1/3 innings pitched, hasn't given up a run yet. His K9 is just under an 8. I think it's at 7.5. And once his pitch count, once they let him go deeper into games, like you said, he's really going to have a lot of value. What have you seen so far from Chirinos, Randy?
Yeah, I like what I've seen. And I think that, you know, the first start he had against Boston, he was at 50 couple of pitches. And then, you know, the other day he gets up into the 70s. So I think Tampa knows that they can't go with 2 bullpen days, essentially, you know, every turn in the rotation. So they're looking for somebody to come up and grab a spot. And, you know, them, like I said, them adding 20 pitches onto Chirinos the other day compared to his first start is a good sign. Maybe he gets into the 80s and then all of a sudden you're getting in where he's a regular starter. So I do think in most leagues you're going to have to grab him now because this, you know, the numbers are good enough that they're going to pop off the page to anybody that maybe isn't looking into Chirinos too deeply. They just see the numbers and they might just grab him not knowing. So I do think if you're interested, you got to grab him now because I don't see him being available much longer. You know, he's somebody that in the minors always, you know, showed really good control, wasn't a big walker, and that's translated so far into these first couple starts and then a relief appearances in the majors. So I'm pretty high on Chirinos as long as Tampa keeps showing that they're going to, you know, move up his pitch count every time.
So I'm big on Chirinos. Another guy who has 14 innings, no runs, is Jacob Junis, and I'm not so hot on him. I know he's being picked up pretty much everywhere at this point. His Ks per 9 is at a 5.79, his BABIP's at a 111.111. Those numbers aren't really sustainable when you look at it like that. Talk to me a little bit about Junis, Randy, and what you see from him, and if you'd rather have Chirinos at this point, or would you rather have Junis?
I'd rather have Junis, but I'm not as high on him as maybe some other people are. You know, I didn't really understand. We were talking about it. There was a couple really big fab bids on him before he had even that first game against Detroit where he wowed everybody and threw a shutout. So I wasn't really into him that much in the preseason. It's definitely been impressive what he's shown so far. But I do think eventually that things are going to start catching up to him. And I can see where Chirinos ends up having, you know, more of a value than Junis down the road, but it's definitely a nice story. He's somebody that could definitely pop onto where he becomes a top, you know, 40 starting pitcher when it's all said and done. If things break right, there's not going to be a lot of wins on that team, but he's definitely shown enough skills in terms of control and striking out just enough guys that he should stay relevant most of the year.
What do you think, Colin? Chirinos or Junis right now?
It's Junis for me, mostly because he has a solidified spot in the rotation, which is what I said last week. I've been impressed, but one of the things that has been an effect on most hitters and pitchers early in the year is the weather outside. So it's affecting the hitters a lot more as far as, it's taken them a while to warm up. It's taken them a while to get in the groove and make sure that, you know, they put an extra couple feet on the fly balls that they're hitting. So, and that, I think that's what Junis is. I think he's a fly ball pitcher. I don't see him helping me in K's. He might be a ratio stabilizer, but like Randy said, it's not that he's not going to provide any wins on that terrible team. So, but between the two, I'll definitely go Junis, and I'll be looking for him if he's out, if he's still available after these two dominant starts.
And you spoke a little bit about hitters taking time to adjust with the cold weather and everything. One guy who hasn't taken any time to adjust, and this is kind of a fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me situation. Eric Thames has 5 homers in 44 plate appearances, and he's hitting .263, which if he had .263, he's going to have a great year. He's obviously not going to .263, at least in my point of view. Randy, do you believe Thames is going to have put a full year together, or is this another one of his Aprils?
I'm leaning more towards that it's another one of his Aprils. I don't see him. And the other thing is the playing time is eventually going to go back away when Yelich is back. And who else are they missing? They're missing somebody else, right?
Lorenzo Cain.
Why am I blanking?
Back.
Yeah, Cain will be back soon. The big one is going to be, when Yelich comes back off the DL, the playing time is going to be reduced. So this is another hot start. You know, if you're in a shallow league, ride it while you can now. But I do think in a month you're going to be looking at Thames playing, you know, 3 times a week, and he's not going to be rosterable in a shallow league.
So I don't buy Thames. Randy doesn't buy him. What about you, Colin?
He's actually had a disappointing April compared to last year. He had 11 home runs and had a .340 average with 18 walks. So he's been a bust so far. But no, I agree that once Yelich and Cain come back, he's going to go back to his bench role. He's a guy that if you have him and you have an inexperienced owner in your league or someone that really believes in the hype, then I'd be looking to sell him for whatever I can get right now. So I still expect him to hit another 6 home runs in April and then nothing else after that.
Another guy having a huge April, Dansby Swanson. And he obviously had all that hype behind him coming out of college. He is at 1 home run, 8 RBIs, 1 stolen base, hitting .348 right now in 48 plate appearances. I mean, it's only been 11 games, but he's crushing the ball. You buy or sell what Swanson's been doing so far, Colin?
Oh, I love Dansby Swanson, and I've put it in the chat multiple times. Justin Mason absolutely hates him for some reason, but he's someone that I'm looking to get if I can put him in my middle infielder spot or if I have a shortstop that's off that day. He's someone that I'm actively looking to get. I mean, it wasn't, but, you know, last offseason, whenever we were touting this guy as the next big thing, the next Derek Jeter, and he was going in the 10th to 12th round in most drafts last year. And then we come into this season, and he's not even being talked about at all. He's ranked as a, 25th overall shortstop in the major leagues. And now he has a better lineup around him. He doesn't have any pressure. All the pressure is on Albies and Acuna. And he has Freddie Freeman in that lineup to take it away as well. So I'm believing in the post-type sleeper. I'm believing in the breakout this year, and I'm looking to get him anywhere I can.
So the thing with Swanson, he's only 24 years old. The guy's only played 11 games at the AAA level. He was really thrown into the fire. So obviously he's going to struggle a little bit. Not everybody's going to hit right out of the gate. There's been guys throughout the history of baseball that have turned out to be great players that haven't hit out of the gate. Now, I was talking to you guys earlier off the air saying, I think, Colin, you replied to it. I was offered in the league that I lost Andrewson in the Invitational, Dansby Swanson for Logan Morrison. It was actually Dansby Swanson or Brandon Crawford for Logan Morrison. I told the guy I'm going to sit tight now. Give me another week. Let's see how Morrison does. Maybe he picks it up a little bit because he's just doing dreadful. Colin, you would have done that trade if you were me, Swanson for Morrison?
Yeah, I would have. Like I said, I believe in the hype. I'm a little bit worried about Morrison's slow start, like you said. I do believe that Morrison might have the better upside as far as power, for sure. I do think that Swanson has a better average, better runs. I just like that Atlanta lineup a lot better. And I also think that if Dansby keeps doing what he's doing, he can find himself slotting in, you know, closer to the leadoff position where Ender Inciarte is, and kind of have a Swanson, Albies, Freeman, Acuna starting four, which would be great. And I think that would help his counting stats. So I understand if you want to stand pat, because if your team needs the home runs, then definitely keep Morrison. But I just, you know, for your situation and because of my love for Dansby Swanson, I would have taken him.
Now, Randy, obviously Colin's buying in on Swanson. What about you?
Yeah, not so much. I think part of it was, he had three games in Coors already this year, and that has a lot to do with what his numbers look like so far. I think he could end up being a starting, middle infield player in a deep 12 team or a 15 team. So I don't think he's I don't think he's unownable or he's going to be off people's teams in a couple of weeks. But I don't see where there's any path at all, unless he just has a crazy BABIP season and his batting average ends up being something ridiculous that he'll never be able to top or duplicate again. I don't see any scenario where he's like a top 12 shortstop this year. I don't see that. So my expectations are tempered a little bit.
Now, would you have done that trade if you were me, the Swanson for Logan Morrison trade, considering that I did lose Elvis Andrews?
You had enough other options there. If I remember correctly from what you were saying with your team. So, I think better days are ahead for Morrison once it warms up there in Minnesota.
Yeah, to put it in context, I do have Zach Cozart. Like I said earlier, I slide him into shortstop. And I have Jed Lowry, who I could always play in the middle infield. So I'm kind of set there, depending on how Morrison does. If Morrison continues to look as bad as he's looked, then maybe I'll go running back to, I think it was Josh Coleman offered me it, then maybe I'll go running back to him and trying to get that deal done. But until then, I'm just going to sit tight, like I said. One last guy who's off to a great start, Nick Pivetta. And I know we keep talking about Pivetta in this chat, in the pitcher list chat I'm in. Everybody's talking about Pivetta. If I'm not mistaken, he hasn't walked a guy yet this season. Randy, what do you got on Pivetta?
Yeah, what he's doing is really impressive so far. He was somebody that had a late round flyer buzz in draft, later into draft season. I don't think he's going to be striking out 10 guys per nine like he has been so far for the first three starts, but he still should be decent enough in terms of strikeouts. The walks were going to be if he was going to sink or swim coming into the year anyway, because last year he was still striking out a guy an inning, but he was walking nearly four batters per nine innings, and he was having a little bit of trouble with the long ball as well. So if the big thing is going to be to watch for him is if he is keeping the walks down like he has through the first three starts, this could be one of the big breakout pitchers for the year.
So Pivetta does have two walks on the season. He had them both in his first game where he went four innings, pitched three earned runs, but since then 5 2/3 no runs, 7 innings no runs, and 9 strikeouts and 7 strikeouts. What do you think about Pivetta so far, Colin, buy or sell?
I'm looking to buy him, but one of the disclaimers I want to put down is I want to see him do it against a proven offense. He did go against Cincinnati, Miami, and then, of course, Atlanta, where he gave up 3 earned runs against Atlanta at the beginning of the season. But I was drafting him. I was drafting him in a lot of my drafts just for late K upside. So I like that fact about him, is he is performing on the strikeouts that we're looking for. So, I think I'm buying, if I'm looking to trade for him, I'm looking to pick him up if he's available, and he might even be better than Chris Archer come the end of the season. He's going to provide the K's, he might have the ratios that we need, he has a great defense behind him, and he might even get a couple wins if Scott Kingery keeps doing what he's doing.
I mean, that's definitely a bold prediction to say Nick Pivetta is going to be better than Chris Archer, But if it does turn out to be true, I mean, you'll definitely make us pay for that one, because I think it is definitely a bold prediction. Randy, any thoughts on that? I know you got to have something for me.
Colin doesn't have a rational thought in his head when it comes to Robbie Ray and Chris Archer, who are a lot more similar than he will ever want to admit. But yeah,
somebody's got to be bold on this podcast, and Randy's just going to sit in his Baltimore corner and, you know, just hype up his guys. But, you know, I'll go out on a limb here and once in a while.
Hey, I was going on a limb at the beginning when you were bringing up Robbie Ray. I think so far it's only three starts, but I'm right. That was his career year last year. He's just not an ace level pitcher.
Yeah, but he has two wins. So you can't say that.
Because his wins are so predictable.
Wins are above everything.
Okay. So that's nice ERA so far this year for him.
You guys are already starting the transition for me. Robbie Ray, who's off to a cold start, 15 2/3, an ERA of 5.74. He does have the two wins, like Colin said. He's undefeated. I'll give you that, Colin. His Ks per nine is a 13.21, but his walks per nine is a 6.32. You got to be disappointed with what you've seen so far, Colin. I mean, clearly, right?
No, I'm not disappointed. I think it'll come around. I'm not disappointed at all. Like I said, I'm liking the wins that I'm getting from him. But in all seriousness, he did a Robbie Ray start against St. Louis. He had 9 strikeouts, looked dominant, only gave up 1 run, but he had 5 walks. And that's what's going to derail some of his season, is if he keeps giving up those walks. And that's the one thing that, you know, he hasn't been able to benefit from the humidor as much as a guy like Patrick Corbin or someone like that. So I think the best is yet to come still. So I still have my hopes up on Robbie Ray. I'm not backtracking yet, but there is a chance that Randy might be right for once. So I'll give him that.
Randy, are you going to accept that as an apology? It's only been 3 games.
it's only been 3 games, but you're already seeing 3 games the flaws that Ray has. You know, he's walking guys. His hard hit rate is almost 50% of the time. Again, 3 starts, small sample size. Not overreacting here. I'm not saying that, you know, Robbie Ray needs to be dropped or anything, but this is just kind of how he is. I think when his career is over and done with, 2017 is going to stick out, you know, in a big way as his best season, and I don't see him getting close to that again. He's still going to be a really good source of strikeouts. If Arizona continues to be a good team, he's going to get wins. You know, he has the ability to have dominant starts at times, but then he has these starts, like what you said, Colin, where he's striking out 8, 9, 10 guys, but he's walking 4, 5, 6 guys and really hurting your ratios in the meantime. So I'm taking this as I'm right on Robbie Ray. So
so I'm going to propose a question to you guys about a couple more people that have gone off to cold starts, and a lot of them come in Cleveland. You have Lindor. This is after today where they scored 9 runs. Excuse me. Yeah, 9 runs. You have Lindor hitting .208, Kipnis in 160, Jose Ramirez 152, Edwin Encarnacion 136, Bradley Zimmer 250. These bats have yet to come alive. They did score 8 runs today, but these bats are still producing very, very terrible fantasy numbers. And I'm going to give you 3 guys here. I want you guys to tell me who was the most likely out of these 3 guys to have the worst season. And it's Francisco Lindor hitting .208, Jose Ramirez hitting 152, or Edwin Encarnacion hitting 136. Who do you trust the least there, Randy?
Ooh, trust the least. I like all 3. Are we talking about just from a batting average perspective or just their overall finish
from a fantasy perspective?
Okay, because I do think that it's going to be hard for Lindor to repeat the power that he had last year. So I guess if I had to pick one, it would be him. But I still really like Lindor a lot. You know, the batting average is there. You know, the steals are there. And he's still going to hit for some power. I don't see it getting into the 30s like it did last year. So I guess I would say Lindor. You brought up Jason Kipnis. I think Jason Kipnis stinks. And I don't think he should be on any fantasy team outside of an AL only. So I don't, you know, we can throw him, for me, you can throw him completely off of that list.
They actually have Michael Brantley, who just came back. He's in .286 now, and it's surprising to see him have the highest average on the entire team because he was kind of written off. Colin, out of those 3 guys, Lindor, Ramirez, and Encarnacion, who do you trust the least?
So, you know, to start off the season, it's been a real cold start, like you said, for the Indians, because they were actually, if you believe it or not, they were the last team in the major leagues to get 10 hits in a game. So, and that happened today. So, you know, moving forward, I think Edwin Encarnacion might be the guy for me, because the problem with him is he always starts off slow. He always takes, you know, a month and a half to heat up. And people are going to be holding on to him because they know that that's what they're going to get from Edwin. He's going to produce after, you know, May and all throughout the rest of the season. But the problem is if he falls off a cliff, we won't have enough time to sell on him because we've been waiting for him to produce and he just didn't. So he might be one of the guys that, you know, if someone wants to pay name value, I would do it now. Lindor might have a hard time, you know, returning the draft value where you draft them at in the first round or beginning of the second. But Edwin would be someone, if this keeps continuing and you don't believe that he can actually bounce back and be Edwin Encarnacion, then I would sell now before it's too late.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the same thing that most people would say, because Edwin's kind of tailed off in the recent years as far as value goes. He's almost more of just a name now. With another bad season, he will be just a name. Two guys that I wanted to touch on last here, Anthony Rizzo, Paul Goldschmidt. Obviously, both these guys are going to end up having fine seasons. I'm not worried about either of these guys. Rizzo is on the DL with that back injury. I believe it's his back. So that he'll be coming back soon. I think the first day he's eligible. Randy, you're not worried about either of these guys, are you?
No, I'm not. I guess if you're going to make me pick one, I'll pick Rizzo just since he has the back thing and sometimes back injuries can linger. But I'm not worried about either one of them at all. It's a long season. You know, they were going to have both of them were going to have a bad 2-week stretch at some point in the season. They just happened to be the first 2 weeks of the season.
Colin, no issues here with Goldschmidt or Rizzo. You're just going to let it play out, right?
Well, like I said, I'm the bold guy, so I'm dropping both of them. I mean, there's a lot of, good guys.
We need to be in more leagues together.
Yeah, there's a lot of good guys on the waiver wire right now. Like a couple guys we'll talk about later, but you know, I'll drop them for Jerks and Profar, all of them. But no, seriously though, so Rizzo, I'm a little bit concerned because of the injury. Like Randy was saying, Paul Goldschmidt, he started off real slow, but his counting stats, or not his counting stats, but his percentages, walk percentage, K percentage, they're in line with his career numbers. And of course, he hit 2 home runs the past 2 days, so I think he's snapping out of it. The problem is he hasn't performed in Arizona yet, so I want to see that happen. But then with Rizzo, you know, there's a chance those back injuries, they linger, and that's one of the things that I was worried about when drafting Corey Seager this year and other guys with back injury problems. So I think Rizzo would be the guy that I want to keep an open eye on whenever he comes off the DLs first eligible. But, yeah, I'm not worried about either of these guys.
Yeah, I don't think you should be. If anybody is out there, I think it's a little too early to be worried about these guys who pretty much are put up the same numbers every year as far as fantasy goes. Now, why don't you give our listeners, starting with you, Randy, a couple guys that they should be on the lookout for to add for the next week or even a long-term thing?
Yeah, the one that pops up right away that we brought up a little bit on the podcast last week, and if anybody read my two-start pitcher column and streamer pitcher column this week on Friends of Fantasy Benefits, I brought up Joey Lucchesi and said that I actually wouldn't have started him this week with a two-start week because the first start was in Coors Field, and even though I'm very high on him for the rest of the season, I wasn't about to have a guy in his third major league start pitching Coors. Well, I was wrong. He pitched great. Now he could still end up getting shelled by the Giants this weekend, and I would end up being right, just in the wrong order. But kind of regardless of what happens with his start this weekend in San Francisco or against San Francisco, I'm really high on Lucchesi. He's somebody that had good strikeout numbers in the minors, and he's kind of translating that over into the majors so far for his first 3 starts. He's not a hard thrower, but he's got good enough stuff so far through 3 starts. He's getting getting opposing hitters to swing outside of the zone 34% of the time, which is good enough for 19th in the big league so far. So that's something that hopefully he can build on. If Lucchesi is out there in your league, go get him. Because I think there could be, he's got the ballpark advantage, you know, really outside of Coors, there's some good places to pitch in the NL West. So I really like Lucchesi going forward. Did you have something, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you for once. I think his deception is one of the things that is getting him where he's been so far. People aren't used to it. People, you know, they'll start swinging before he even throws the pitch because he's got that deception. So I'm excited to see what he brings. He is available in my main event league that I'm looking at, so I'm wondering how much I want to spend on him since I only have 4 starting pitchers, including David Price. So he's someone that I'm definitely interested in. And one of the guys that I'm looking to add coming up for this year or for this week is Brian Goodwin. So You know, with the Adam Eaton injury and just with the turnover in that Nationals team, he's actually been getting a lot of playing time. Of course, due to the Eaton injury, and then Michael Taylor has been very subpar so far. But I think Brian Goodwin could provide a lot of good stats whenever there's an injury. He's played in 5 straight games. He's done a couple pinch hits this year, but he's had a 2-homer game. He's had a steal. He's had 2 steals, actually. So he's a guy that I'm keeping an eye on in deeper leagues or in leagues where I own Eaton or in leagues where I own Michael Taylor. It would have been Victor Robles for me, but since he's had that hyperextended elbow, I'm moving over to Brian Goodwin, and he's on the positive side of the platoon since he's a lefty. So I think he'll just continue to get at bats, and I think he'll still perform as well.
So that's one hitter, one pitcher. You got any more pitchers for us, Randy, before we sign off here?
Yeah, somebody that's actually coming back tonight, making his return from Tommy John surgery, is Nick Trapiano. He's on the mound as we are recording this. He's looking pretty well. A guy that never really wasn't a hard thrower, but he got enough strikeouts in the past. His issues have always kind of been with walks. He's got good breaking stuff. You know, you worry a little bit about the command coming off of Tommy John, so I'm not rushing out and picking him up in every format and every league, but he's somebody that could have streaming value. You see what he's doing tonight against a weaker lineup like the Royals. Yeah, he's somebody that I'm really looking into a little bit. And then just as far as another guy, not so much to pick up, long term, but Chad Kuhl this weekend has a start at the Marlins. If you are in a head-to-head matchup, or if you're just looking to stream a spot, if you have an open spot from somebody that went in the DL, streaming us the Marlins, Kuhl, somebody that strikes out guys, and he's kept the walks down so far. So, Kuhl at the Marlins is somebody I'm looking to target this weekend if you need a streamer.
So, Colin, give us 2 hitters here, and don't cheat like Randy did and say somebody that's playing as we speak, because Nick Trapiano is 5 1/3 here, no runs, 6 strikeouts. But all joking aside, what do you got for us, Colin? You got any more hitters?
Well, Trapiano is facing a minor league team, so that doesn't even count either. So the other two hitters that I'm looking to pick up, especially in deeper leagues that I know that are going to give me playing time, first of all, is going to be Joey Wendell with the Tampa Bay Rays. He plays second base, so middle infield eligible. He's played 5 days straight. I think they had a day off on the 6th, and he's played the 2 games before that as well. So they're giving him a lot of chances, and I think with Brad Miller on the DL, he's going to keep performing, and whenever Miller comes back, he can just slide over to first base. Crone can go back to the bench or DH. So I like him as a long-term play, and especially for this upcoming week as well, just as a guy that'll fill the stat category and give me, runs, maybe a little pop, a few RBIs, and maybe he'll start stealing as well. And the other guy that I'm looking at is another guy that's getting a lot of playing time on a bad team in Chicago White Sox, and that's Nick Delmonico. So he's playing left field every day for them. He showed a little pop last year, and he's already got 1 home run this year. So last year he showed that he can hit 9 home runs at the big league level. He was able to hit .262. So I like guys with a lot of playing times, and this is more geared towards deeper leagues. That way I know I have someone that's going to be in the lineup every day barring injury, and that's not going to tank any of my, counting stats or average or anything like that. So those are a few of the deeper guys that I'm looking to add for this upcoming week.
All right, Colin, why don't you tell everybody your Twitter handle just in case they don't have it yet? And I know you're on a couple podcasts these last couple of days, if you want to shout those out.
Yeah, so you can find me at CWeatherWax13. I was on the Push Accept podcast that we recorded today. Should be out sometime this weekend with Ben Brennis, Donnie Miller, and Smata Matt Adams made his podcast debut. So that was fun. And then I was a guest on the Coon and Friends podcast that we recorded. I believe it was on Tuesday. Should be coming out sometime tomorrow. So that's what I'm working on now. Mike and Randy have their pitcher columns that they're working hard on, and I'm just here voicing my opinions.
And Randy, just let them know where they can find that streaming article that you do weekly.
Yeah, it's on Friends with Fantasy Benefits. It's streamers. I give a handful of guys that I recommend, a handful of guys that I wouldn't stream, and then I do an entire breakdown of every 2-star pitcher. I rank them into groups, and who I would kind of give a line of which ones I'm definitely having in my lineup and which ones I'd look to avoid. And you can find me on Twitter at RTH222.
And you guys can find me at Mike the Rotocop. I also do a streamers under 20% owned, according to NFBC, at the time of writing. I put out about 5 pictures every week that you should really count on streaming. And one thing I wanted to mention before we totally go off the air, I'm looking at the overall standings for TGFBI, and I don't see you in the top 5 here, Colin. What happened, man?
I don't know what happened, man. We lost Suarez to his, you know, fractured thumb, so we're trying to figure out what we need to do with that. But, you know, we'll be right back up there. There's no doubt about that.
If I'm not mistaken, I see Randy Haynes, the Wax Report, is still ahead of Randy Haynes. Randy, I'm sorry, man. I was rooting for you this week.
I do think, I mean, I'm kind of talking out of my butt here, but just going off of last time I looked at the overall standings, we might be the highest performing podcast so far that's out there. You know, all 3 of us, I think, are in the top like 45 or so.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's any other podcast out there that can say that.
I don't mean to toot my horn, but I'm in 2nd currently overall, and the Wax Report is in 30th, Randy 39th. So hopefully when Smat updates those, because this was at 6 p.m., sorry, after the night, hopefully we could each climb a little bit higher. We're signing off. Dirt Dogs Podcast, Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.